Accession number 20670, Reel 1.
Joseph Abbott, Reel 1. So, can you tell me your date of birth and where you were born?
Date of birth was the 4th of January, 1924. Okay. And I was born in Fauldhouse, West Lothian, Scotland.
And what did your father do?
He was in a bank at the time in West Lothian. He'd obviously been through the 1480 war and, of course, married an English lady and they settled up in Scotland again.
Did you have brothers and sisters?
One brother. He was in the RAF, James.
And where did you go to school?
Just as a matter of fact, I came from Scotland down. We had to come down to Blackburn because of the death of my mother's parents, and I went to primary school in Blackburn, and then of course we eventually moved here, and I went to St Thomas's in the Heaton Chapel here, and it's in Heaton Chapel, it's just down the road, you probably passed it actually. From there, of course, I regrettably thought I would be able to contribute to the upkeep of the household and left at 14 and went straight to work from there.
And what work did you do?
Well, I walked around Manchester looking for somewhere to go to work, and I eventually finished up at a place called S&J Watts. That was a big warehouse in Manchester. It had four sort of big towers at the front. They've long since gone. It's now an hotel there. But I went in and asked if there were any vacancies, and they told me yes, I could report the following Monday, which I did. And that was at 8 o'clock. I had to get down there from here. That was from Heaton Chapel, so I had to leave home here about 7-ish at the time. And report to a man called Mr. Prince in the basement of then, and he was like a Dickens character with a black frock coat and white shirt, etc. And he was on a raised platform in the cellar, which was converted to the reception room for all the goods coming from the rest of the warehouse, and he surveyed everything and just kept a beady eye on everybody. Just, it reminded me very much of Dickens' character, you know.
And how long were you there?
I was there for, perhaps 2 years or approximately, it would be. Barely 2 years, and then I decided I didn't like to be confined inside too much. I would prefer to be in the open air, and I left, and my brother at the time, who was quite a much cleverer chap than I, worked for a dairy, a local dairy, because he too wanted to be outside. So I went with him for a period, which at the time I wasn't particularly tall, and of course helping him with one of the, in those days, the bikes which they used to have, and you loaded two crates on it, was bigger than I was virtually, and was very difficult to hold, particularly in icy weather, you know. But I stuck it for a bit, and it was quite interesting work. And eventually I went to a further place in Withenshaw and came back up with the same dairy. But from there I decided then again that I wanted a change. And I went to a friend of mine whose father had a sculpture business, and I went as a letter cutter trainee, of course, a letter cutter and sculptor. And I spent, 17 years almost, I think, with them.
Right. So what job were you doing when you joined the army?
When I joined the army, I was with the sculptors, but I had to go. I was at Droylesden at the time, at a branch at Droylesden, and then I had to report when I was called up. I reported to the Brigadon Barracks in Aberdeen for the Gordon Highlanders, because my father had been in, he'd been in the Scottish Regiment during the Great War, and of course I thought, well, I'd follow suit and ask for a Scottish Regiment, and of course that's where they sent me.
So when you got your call up papers, and you went, had to go along somewhere, did you?
Well, I had to go up to Aberdeen.
Right. So you were called up into the...
I was called up into the Argyll and Sutherland depot for initial training. That was where I started my training.
So you were, they were recruiting from Manchester then? They were drafting?
Well, this was, I suppose, due to where they wanted to put personnel at the time. I mean, people were going all over, naturally, but I had to leave here, I know, about midnight and travel up to Aberdeen.
What were your feelings? I mean, you knew you were going to be called up.
Well, fortunately, my father was the type who didn't talk a lot about the Great War, but he let you know the details, and of course I knew what I was going into, and I think that helped a lot, because the first night at Aberdeen, the barrack hut which we went into was full of chaps there who were weeping and goodness knows what, because their first time away from home, and that was it, you know.
What was your parents' attitude to being called up? And your mother, was she?
Well, my mother, of course, was rather upset. She'd, Jim had already gone into the RAF, my brother, and she was upset about me going. Dad saw me off, actually, down at Manchester. He came down to Manchester to see me off on the train, but Mum stayed at home. She was too upset at the time. Mm. But she had also been in the Women's Royal Army Corps, I don't know what they call them in those days, I forget now. But that's how she came to meet Dad, actually, at Lichfield.
And, so did your father give you any advice? Mm.
Well, obviously, he just more or less told me to do as you're instructed to do, but use your head, you know, and do it as well as you can, and that's more or less stuck with me, you know, through my life, basically. But It was quite an experience, and as I say, I was fortunate on the train when I got to Glasgow. I had to change trains, and I met a chappy called Kemp, and he said, well, stick with me, and he said, I'll see you right, because I'm meeting my brother, you know. And he immediately produced a little tot of whiskey and said, well, we'll meet the brother and we'll go for a lunch instead of going straight to the barracks. And that's what we did, and I was rather glad of that eventually, because we spent some happy odd times, odd hours at his sister's place at Bankery at the River Fuke, watching the salmon leap and things, you know. It's quite interesting, really.
So before you actually got into the army, I mean, you had some idea of what year was this?
When I went in, it was 42, but I'd been in since 16, virtually. I'd been with the LDV, or the Home Guard, as it's called, because my father, of course, had gone to help down there, and my brother was also in. So for that period before I went in the army, I had that initial sort of LD for all that Dad's army sort of ridiculed it a bit. It does help a little if you just...
So what date did you actually join up?
In 1942, it was in November in 1942, and...
What do you know about the war then? I mean, were you following closely what was going on in the news?
Well, as an 18-year-old... Sorry. As an 18-year-old, I suppose you were interested in what was going on, but your attitude, I suppose, to life is somewhat different to as you get older. You know, you don't see perhaps as many of the tragedies and things as you are apt to do now.
Did you have an idea what type of warfare you'd be involved in?
Oh, I think pretty well, because, I mean, we'd had the Manchester Blitz and you knew all about the bombs and the one thing and another. We'd had one or two just locally, or fairly locally at the time. So, I mean, you knew more or less what it was about, but the reality of it is somewhat different to the sort of expectation of it, I think.
Did you think it was going to be like the First War, what you'd heard your father do? He was in the army.
Well, no, I think it, you appreciated that things must have advanced a little bit compared to the First War, First World War, but things were very much the same as regards discipline and things like that. I think that they were pretty static, you know.
Right, so you... told us about your journey there. What was it like actually arriving at the barracks? What was the place like?
Well, as I say, I was fortunate in meeting this Bill Kemp, because we didn't go with all the hordes that were going in. We arrived a little bit later than the vast bulk who were put into trucks and whipped off from the station to the barracks. And we arrived a little bit later after having a meal at his sister's, and we more or less strolled into the barracks, and they just said, well, go and get your medical and get your uniform, and that was, you were sort of fed through the system then.
What was the barracks itself like? What sort of buildings were they?
Well, I mean, as far as I can remember now, it was quite biggish. It was a big sort of square that you were not allowed to walk across. You had to walk round all the time. People were not allowed to walk across the square, and things like that were taught once you got into the system, you know.
What was your billet like?
Well, it was a hut, just offset from the barracks, and some wire fencing just surrounding them. And your bedding was three boards and two little trestles, which were about 3 or 4 inches off the floor. And you had to collect these, and at all times they had to be scrubbed white. So you had that as part of your training as well. So two blankets, I beg your pardon, two blankets. And again, I think you accepted it. At least I more or less accepted it. Some got a bit upset about it, but you accepted that it was there and you had it to do, and so you got on with it, you know.
So what was it like getting all your equipment?
Well, that was similar to, I suppose, going anywhere to be issued with anything now. That they just say, well, cap size, VD size and all the rest of it, and dish it out, and that was it. You went and took it back to your barracks and tried to get it sorted out, and everything then had to be laid out absolutely spotlessly up at the barracks to make sure that each morning or whenever they came round, it was all laid out as per plan, you know.
So who taught you about the laying out and the cleaning of all your equipment?
Well, again, I think that goes back to Dad. Not so much the laying out of equipment, but, I mean, when I was roughly about 4, I think, he turned to me one day and said, well, these are your shoes, now you clean them from now on, and this was it. And that, again, didn't come as any hardship once I got there. You just got on with it. But you were shown by the corporals in charge of the hut how to lay stuff out and how it should be done, you know. And then once they'd showed you, you did it. From then on, if you did it wrong, that was your lookout, you know.
Do you remember your army number?
1430-2924.
So, what were the corporals like? I mean, do you remember any names?
Corporals? Mm. Well, I can't remember names of corporals up there, but
any of the other NCOs or officers?
Well, not from Aberdeen. I can't remember the names of NCOs there, because you were just trained there and this was it, you know. All I can remember basically about one particular individual was that he had a tam o' shanter, and he was ginger-haired, and he was a Scot, and he was built like a barn door, so you had to be very careful how he replied, you know.
How did they treat you?
Well, in the main, pretty well. The only snag I ever came up against there was when after a certain number of weeks training, you were allowed out. Before that, you weren't allowed off the barracks at all. But I turned up at the gates, the office at the gates, in a pair of brown shoes, which I always wore, polished brown shoes. The corporal in charge of the guard said, you can't go out, get back, you know. So I said, why not? So he said, brown shoes, you know, so brown shoes. So I said, well, looking at my brown shoes and your boots, I said, my brown shoes are cleaner. So anyway, he said, get on, and he let me out with that. So I was able to go out on Aberdeen with the brown shoes.
So what were the kit inspections like? Were they very regular?
Well, yes, because you got the odd individual who took things to extremes, and They had to be done properly. They had to be done as they set them out, and if you didn't, then you were either on a charge or hauled over the coals or given fatigues or something of that nature. It was a case of this is what we do and you do it that way. Looking back in retrospect, I always think that although they seem ridiculous, these things, these were aimed at the ones that couldn't absorb some of these, and it inculcated a bit of discipline and doing things without thinking. And that in later, which was proved in later actions, it proved to be, you know, very, very beneficial, because it saved your lives in some cases. You did things automatically.
Did anyone resent all this, the strictness and boredom?
Well, a lot of people resented it, obviously, but, you know, you didn't sort of get involved with those very much. I never sort of bothered. I thought, well, it's a bit silly. You're only making things, you know, more uncomfortable for yourself, because you lost privileges if you started being awkward, you know. So I didn't see much point in being stupid, and that's what I consider it to be. It's not been standing up for your rights, it's being stupid, you know.
What was the food like then, Aberdeen?
It went down okay. Like everywhere else, you got out into Aberdeen and you made a beeline for either the YMCA or the Church of Scotland or whatever to see if you could get something to eat there as well, because being 18 years old, I mean, you had quite an appetite, and after all the exercise, even more so. But the food, generally, I suppose, was pretty good.
How did you take to army life with its lack of privacy and communal living?
It never bothered me. It never bothered me, basically. As I say, it was probably due to Dad's teaching initially, but I just accepted that these were there and you did the best you could, and that was it, you know. I found that there was no sense at the time in just being stroppy about things. I mean, you certain things you didn't particularly like, but you got on with it, you know.
Did anyone that you saw actually sort of kick over the traces, or, you know, refuse, get into real big trouble?
Well, not particularly. There were always the odd occasions when people were sort of marched off or something for some silly misdemeanour, but that was the army life as it was, you know. Going spud bashing and things were just things that you, if you crossed the line, then you got a fatigue for it, and that was it, to keep you in line a bit.
Did you know anyone who couldn't cope with it, you know, and just couldn't sort of emotionally? You mentioned people crying on the first night.
Well, yes, but I think that was the fact of being so strange. They were divorced from their home life, the nice beds and all the rest of it, and, you know, mum bringing your cup of tea and things of this nature. And I think that those were the people that were upset, really. I think you felt you were away from home, naturally, but you looked upon it as a sort of, part of your life and an addition to it, and this was it. I think you got on with it.
Were you quite excited about being in the army?
Well, I won't say excited. I suppose I had this idea initially of being with the Scottish Regiment like Dad, but this didn't materialise, unfortunately, or fortunately for me. But I don't think I was upset or, you know, excited in any particular way. It just came as natural, so I had to get on with it.
Did you do any guard duties while you were doing initial...
Guard duties?
Yeah, while you were doing initial training.
Now then. Not while I was doing initial training, I didn't. We got all the necessary drills, I seem to remember, but that didn't come till later, all the guard duties.
So tell me about the basic drill and how you learnt that?
Oh, basic drill, the marching, the saluting, the rifle drill, let me think now. I'm thinking about basic drills. Your light machine guns and things of that nature, all the weapon drill that they had at the time, you had, you know, sort of, you were taken through those, you were given instruction in those.
And that would be, I mean, the square bashing. That's
well, yes, you got the, you got that initially, you got the square bashing to put in line virtually, you get everybody working together, and then you went gradually from that. And then the perhaps more particular items came later on as you progressed from there to other units, etc. You got differences from there on.
So during basic training, did they make a big thing about fitness?
Well, obviously, they when they went for your medical initially, if there was any, that was at Stockport here, if there was anything wrong, you didn't get an A, you know. Then if it was so bad that it would affect your army life, then of course something was done about it then, at least that's what I assumed.
Did you do a lot of PT and so on?
Oh, yes. Oh, there was no doubt about that, and that went on, and even more so. That sort of physical exercise went on from there right on through to...
Did you do route marches?
Yes, we used to go out at Brigadon. We used to do a 9-mile route march. And that, November, it could be quite, you know, nasty up there. But what I remembered particularly about those, when we got back, before we got to the barracks, a piper used to meet you. And the piper used to pipe you in as you marched in. And oddly enough, you got the Scots lads and the English lads, I must admit, straightened up when the pipe started playing them in. It seems incredible, but it really happened. You know, I remember that, marching into the barracks with the piper playing. But those were 9-mile route marches.
Did you do any boxing?
Well, not particularly. They did do some at Aberdeen, but we did a little bit of, I think, playing about, I suppose. But those that were capable of boxing were... I mean, I was never a boxer as such, so those that were handy at it took it up, I suppose.
So on basic training, what weapons training did you do?
Then at Aberdeen, excuse me, you got the rifle, you got the light machine gun, and I think we got the Bren, bayonet drill, of course, you got that. But other than that, there was nothing. Oh, grenade throwing, possibly. Mm-hmm. Just grenade throwing.
Did you find any of that particularly difficult, or did you enjoy it?
Well, no, I didn't find it particularly difficult. I won't say I enjoyed it all, but... I got along with it, you know, as I say, it didn't sort of worry me unduly.
What about the bayonet practice?
Well, that was something which you never sort of, all you bayoneted was a straw dummy, and of course it didn't really connect with the human body, and this was, you know, something which of course you didn't sort of come up with right away, sort of thing, and it didn't really worry me. I just sort of got on with things and got it up.
How did you get on with the instructors? Did people look up to the instructors? Or?
Well, you tended to regard them with a certain amount of awe, because I suppose they were the instructors, and if you didn't do what they say, then naturally you were going to be in trouble of some sort, and I didn't see the fun in going looking for trouble unnecessarily. But I got on with everybody okay.
Did you do anti-gas precautions in training?
No, I can't recall it much at Aberdeen, but we did it later on when I moved on from there. But no, we didn't. I can't. I suppose we must have had something up there, but I don't recall having it at Aberdeen. One thing I do remember was that. Not with the training, but there was a lady who was, oddly enough, with the BBC Children's Hour, I think it was at the time, and one of the lads had got to know her. And when we were leaving, she invited us all round out of the hut, out of his particular hut, this laddie that she knew, and we had a gorgeous meal, all best cookie, home cooking and scones, and that was lovely. I remember that sticks out a mile. That and the salmon leaping in the river Fuke and chopping wood at the golf course at Bankery and things like that for this laddie, Bill Kemp's sister.
So, I mean, you got a bit of time off. What did you do in your time off there?
Well, when we got out, it was basically in Aberdeen, and we part of it, naturally, you looked for the different sort of YMCAs and all that sort of thing, and you knew you could get a drink, a cup of coffee or whatever you liked there, and scones and stuff, you know. So that was it. Food was one of the things you looked for.
Did you mix much with civilians, or did you stick?
Oh, you came across them naturally in the course of the day, but your life was with the army lads, and when you went out, you were probably with other army lads, and this was it. And in the canteens, there were army, and of course, civilians, of course, were the backbone of serving you and things. You got on with them, okay, but Bill Kemp's relatives, of course, I got on with them at their place, and that was it. But that lasted for a bit, and then of course I moved on. They had all the different psychological tests and mechanical tests and all that. And
what sort of psychological tests did they
do? Well, they were giving you shapes that you had to associate, how many pieces went in what, and all this business. You put things together as best you could, you know. And
what other tests did you do?
The mechanical tests were. They gave you bits, a tray with bits and pieces, and you had to see what you could assemble out of that. Could you assemble a light fitting or whatever, and all these bits and pieces. So that was right up my street, because I like fiddling about, making things and doing things. So that, I think, helped eventually to get me posted to the, when my training finished, to the for the 59th Training Regiment, the Armoured Corps, Royal Armoured Corps.
It's all right. So while you were up on initial training, we'll stick to that for the moment. No females, obviously, in the barracks. But I mean, was this a sort of something that you lads, you know, you were out sort of. I wouldn't say looking for girls, but you know, that was a sort of an interest in your. Free time, as it were.
Well, it didn't. Again, it was one of those things that I seemed to be so occupied all the time that you didn't get an awful. I don't know how a lot of fellas managed it personally, but I mean, I never seemed to get a lot of time for it. But I got on, as I say, I got on with the people I met, and that was fair enough as far as I was concerned.
Did you get much news or? Were you able to see newsreels and so on of the war?
Oh, yes. You got the... If you got a chance to get to the cinema, you saw the cinema newsreels, but, I mean, again, it kept you, I suppose, informed as to some of the things after a fashion. What was got a lot of it was biased, of course, I think. But it just kept you sort of au fait with what was going on around you, you know. There was no thought... I don't think at the time that you were going to be suddenly plunged into something, you know. I don't think that entered your head, really. You just got on with what you were doing, and that was it. I know when the postings came at Aberdeen, I remember in the hut at the night before we got the postings, we had a laddie. All of a sudden, everybody was basically asleep, I think, but all of a sudden, this laddie suddenly shot up and shouted out, "Jesus Christ, the Western Desert," as loud as he could, you know, and everybody saw it, or nearly everybody, I know, and I woke up, and sure enough, the following day, his posting was to the Western Desert, and that was the night before, he had no idea, that, you know, but one of those odd things that happens. But,
so the postings came. And you were sent?
Yes, the postings came through. They sent me down to County Durham, Barnard Castle, and there was a new training, RAC training unit had been established down there, and we were the second intake. Now, that was run at the time by, well, I'm saying run, a lot of the personnel were the 11th Hussars, a red beret they used to wear, on the staff, and... That was getting more towards the tank side of it and the, you know, armoured car side and basically that sort of thing. We Are you?
Sorry, yeah. Do you remember the date you went there?
Well, it would be, let's see, November, December, January, beginning of January, early January, I think. It's in my book there, actually. I'm not just sure, but...
That's January 1943. Joseph Abbott, end of Reel 1.